a game that broke sales records, laid off much of their team because they didn't break records by enough. So what's the point of working on a game that breaks sales records? Tonight is March 15th, 2026, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is everyone, Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash. Later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
Beware the Ides of March! That's what I believe. That's what today is. Today's the day you can take the picture and post of, like, stabbing the Little Caesars pizza box. Today's the day you can make that joke. Hello, everybody. Welcome to yet another edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show. Here, the Ides of March. Here, the not statues of for people who are in movies edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on the Grouch Night, I guess it's honoring the Grouch. Right from Sesame Street. Anyway, people are doing that. That's going on tonight. If you're joining us here instead, thank you so much. We do try to tape the show live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us, interact with the show directly, but we are a podcast, so you can join us on our Discord server and talk about things over there and even put in things that you may want us to talk about. And I don't pick everything, but I appreciate everything. Trust me, if I had more than an hour, maybe I would. But you can join us over there. VogNetwork.com/Discord is where you can go to find out more about that and also participate and talk back about things that maybe I talked about in the past. So thank you so much for being here. We are obviously a small community, small podcast, and that's just fine. Yes, I've been doing this for a long time, and I'm totally okay with not being huge. I'm a huge person. That's part of that's medical, but we're not talking about that. But anyway, yes, Dark Tysia says scram. Yes, because this obviously it's about the Grouch from Sesame Street. That's what everything is about tonight, right? And it is the Ides of March. It is March 15th. I am still loving the Commodore 64 Ultimate. I spent too much time last week talking about it. Actually, no, I didn't spend enough time talking about it, but... I've been really loving it. Put it back down downstairs. Did wind up actually getting online with it on some BBSs. I tried to go on a BBS that is so BBS is Bulletin Board Systems. This is how we got online before the internet was in many people's homes. The internet existed; it absolutely existed in the 80s, but it was more for like educational institutions and the military. It didn't really get into consumers' homes until the 90s, and then it's debatable when in the 90s you would consider it. But before then, we would use our telephones, we would actually tie up the telephone line and call up somebody else's computer, and I would do this on the PC. Which had 80 columns by 25 rows, and that's what, like, the ANSI standard is. Or I would be on a Commodore 64, which had 40 columns and something like 20 to 25 rows. And I've actually had on the show before a person by the name of Josh Renaud. I don't actually remember how to pronounce his last name because I only see it written. He's actually a newspaper reporter for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and he also runs a blog called Break Into Chat, which is what a sysop, a system operator, could do, is break into chat to chat with the user that is currently calling in, because only one person could be on the BBS at a time, maybe two if you had a lot of money and you had two phone lines. I called into his BBS, which is more of a PC-style BBS, 80 columns by 25 rows, and I'm trying to like look at it on my Commodore 64, which is 40 whatever, and thanks to the internet, thanks to Blue Sky, sometimes social media does good. I sent him this picture because I had to like email him like, hey, what's my password? And apparently BBS is now, you actually have to remember your user ID number that it assigns you, and if you don't know that one, then you can't log in. So I've actually had to, email someone. And one of the other BBSs, I didn't write down my user ID because we used to just use our username as our login. And I'm like, what's my user ID? And they're like, it's this. I had to ask him what my password was. And it's like, you can use an email address to have it reset it. And I forget what email address I gave. But anyway, I got on and it looked like crap. But on Blue Sky, somebody's like, you know, CCGMS, which is the Commodore, which was the terminal that I was using, supports 80 column mode. On a Commodore 64, and I'm like, what is this wizardry? And it turns out it was a later version than the one the Commodore 64 Ultimate gave us. Once I got that installed, it looked really weird, but it worked. So I could actually go on PC BBS stuff on my Commodore 64 Ultimate. You can do this yourself if you want to go into the world of BBSs. It is a completely different experience, completely different world. You can do it. There's a program called SyncTerm on PC. SyncTerm, and that will allow you to get on the BBSs that have ANSI graphics, which is kind of the PC graphics standard, where PETSCII was the Commodore graphics standard. You can get on PCs that way, and if you full screen it, so it's really huge text, that's pretty much what we had growing up, and my first times being online. Sjernamat says, oh geez, I don't even remember my ICQ ID. I actually do remember my ICQ ID, and we actually talked about it on Blue Sky because people are like, kid, I have, you know, accounts older than you and blah blah blah, and they're like, my ICQ UID is this, and they rattled off like seven or eight numbers, and I'm like, haha, mine was 318975. That's right, it only had six digits, and that's how you know you're old. My slash dot ID is five digits. Now, that's not the oldest. There are people that have four and three and two-digit UIDs over there. But my slash dot one's 5 years old. So I get to be part of the you must be new here meme if I post it on slash dot and stuff. And then somebody with a four-digit or three-digit would reply to me and say, no, you're the new one. You're a newbie. I've learned that I need to write down those ID numbers. And actually, the terminal program on the Commodore 64 actually has a thing in the phone book where you write down, you can put in what your ID number and your password, and then you can even hit a key combination, it'll send it for you. Very secure. Very secure. But then again, the Commodore 64 itself is inherently a secure system because it's not actually connected to the internet. The Commodore 64 Ultimate can connect to the internet, but the 64 itself does not. So it actually is kind of secure. And Questbush says, I remember looking for a patch for Privateer, the old Wing Commander game, and was poking around a BBS when the local sysop broke in and started chatting with me because they saw what I was doing and was curious what I was looking for. Once I told them, they hooked me up and wished me a good day. Yeah, because, like, when the cloud is just someone else's computer. And BBSs were just someone else's private computer. And so you were a guest on someone else's computer. It was no different than if you walked up to their computer in their home and started typing. So, yeah, of course, the sysops are going to want to know what you're trying to do. As Sharon Amat is, what is this handwriting you speak of? I don't know what it is. I type because I can't read my own handwriting, which is great because everybody's like, why don't you write this down? I'm like, no. Dark Tetsuya said, never had a chance to do BBS stuff, but the closest I got was Novanet / Plato back in high school. Yeah, there was a... In college, we had a, you know, like kind of a, it was more internet based is what we had in the 90s in college. It was a little bit of Gopher, which predated the web, but it was still another internet protocol and stuff like that. And on BBSs, I would do a lot of door games. And that was, you know, people are talking about MUDs now, and that was over the internet. But door games were... door games got revitalized, and you didn't know it. So if you've never basically a door in a BBS, the reason they call it a door is because it is a doorway to another program. So there would be other programs on the BBS that were not part of the BBS software. You would open the door; it would basically read the information from, like, you know, what your user was and stuff like that, and then it would run its own program and send the text back to you. And a lot of these games that were very well known. Legend of the Red Dragon is one that a lot of people know. Trade Wars 2002 is another one that a lot of people know. And those started off as BBSs. But it got a resurgence with Zynga. the gameplay mechanics, or basically the core loop, got a resurgence with Zynga because you couldn't be, you only had a limited amount of time on the BBS. You maybe only got 60 minutes a day to be on that particular BBS. So you know, really you would rotate through a bunch of BBSs. And that included like posting, uploading, downloading, posting on the boards, having, you know, flame wars with other people, because yes, that happened too, but also playing these games. And you would get, so they would limit the amount of turns you got in a game. And you would do, like, it was asynchronous. You would do, like, have, like, 20 or 30 or 40 or something turns, and then you'd be cut off. And when Zynga came out with, like, Farmville and stuff back when the iPhone was new and, you know, this was a brand new market, they used a lot of the same stuff that BBS Door Games used to limit what you could do because it was asynchronous. And especially in like trade wars and stuff, when you logged off, your ship was still there in whatever sector. So other people could come in and blow your ship away and take stuff away. So you wanted to make sure that you ran out of turns in a safe place where you probably wouldn't get attacked or something wouldn't happen with all the other people. So it was so a lot of that, the stuff that we learned creating door games in the 90s is what went into the early mobile games like Farmville and things like that later on in the late 2000s, early 2010s, when iPhone gaming and mobile gaming became a big business. And then MUDs, which are multi-user dungeons, those were text MMOs, basically. And they might have also had, you know, some kind of turn limit per day, but because they were on the internet, they were synchronous. So you could actually be in there with someone else. They're playing at the same time, and then you'd go into the same room and interact and kill each other. So that's MUD. There was MUDs. There were MUSHes, which was multi-user shared hallucination, is what a MUSH was, which meant there was no combat. It was just a social gathering place. Moo, I can't remember what Moo stood for, but it was like multi-oriented or something. There was MUD, MUSH, and Moo, and I don't remember what Moo stood for. But those were kind of like especially early in the internet days, and some of those are still around. One of those MUDs, I believe there is a MUD that was started in like the early 90s that's still in operation today, still getting updates today. So, relics of the early internet. Not all of it went away. So I'm still enjoying the Commodore 64 Ultimate and getting back to, sitting down at a computer in a different part of the house with nothing but the keyboard and the monitor and, you know, having music playing and stuff. So I'm having a blast with it, hoping to get on Neo Habitat soon, which was a graphical mush from the late 80s, early 90s by Lucasfilm, and it was part of the Q-Link or Quantum Link service, which later became the service called AOL when it went to PCs. The PC version was called AOL. It actually looks like Maniac Mansion. It's a lot using some of the same assets and stuff from Maniac Mansion. But there's been a basically one of the original creators, and some people have been trying to revive it and make it work, where the server is currently running on, like, I think Rust, that programming language, and running on a Raspberry Pi or, you know, a Linux server somewhere. But the Commodore disks still work, and somebody did get it working with the Commodore 64 Ultimate. It works now in Vice, the emulator, but the modem in the Commodore 64 Ultimate is a little bit different than what Vice does. So somebody got it working, and then I will be getting back and hopefully getting back on Neo Habitat. I actually got on and streamed from Neo Habitat like years ago, and it's a YouTube video on my personal YouTube of me from Vice. I was using the Vice emulator to get into it, but it's there. There's been some updates to it since. Dark Disease says, "Oh, Habitat. I was watching a YouTube where that came up. Apparently, it blew up over in Japan. I don't know if Habitat did, but Worlds Away, which was basically the successor to Habitat, I think did blow up over time in Asia, and because that is the same kind of family. Worlds Away is the same family. It was kind of the next version of Habitat. It was called Club Carib or Club Caribe on Q-Link, so it wasn't actually called Habitat. But it's also, if you remember the TV show Halt and Catch Fire, Habitat is the game in one of the seasons, that they basically based the show around. It was essentially Habitat was in that show. Dark Sagra says mud object oriented is what Moo stood for, and so that makes sense. And Dark Sagra says, I remember AOL and DOS. Yeah, AOL was the PC side. So they had Q-Link, and then they're like, well, now, you know, PCs are getting online. So let's get some there. It's America Online. And, like, a lot of the stuff that was in Q-Link went over to AOL, because I think People Connection is the name of the chat room in both. And then they sunsetted Quantum Link because Commodore stopped making the machines, and they finally shut it down in, like, 94, I want to say, or 95, to focus fully in on AOL. So I was already on Prodigy at the time, which was the superior service. And yeah, so anyway, news about Commodore. I do have a little bit of news about the Commodore this week that was shared. Because Game Developer Conference was this week, so a lot of this stuff like this got announced. There's going to be someone who a lot of modern gamers know that a lot of retro gamers and especially Commodore people don't know. That is joining the Commodore family. And Engadget reports that Phil Spencer leaving his long-held role at Xbox might have made all the headlines last month, but a few years ago, the big story was company veteran Larry Herb, Xbox Live's Major Nelson, his departure from Microsoft. Herb recently seemingly hinted at a return to the company. He basically was like, asked Asha Parma, like, hey, give me a call if you need something. But now he's actually at Commodore. So the Xbox icon joins the recently revived 80s computer brand as community development advisor, where his job will be to help support and expand the global community, Commodore said in a press release. Herb, who is also the public face of Xbox during the brand's heyday, is now tasked with helping to modernize Commodore by introducing it to a, quote, new generation of creators, developers, and enthusiasts. Unquote. And so what Herb said, quote, I've always believed that the best thing a company can do is partner with its community, and with a passionate fan base carrying the torch for 31 years, Commodore's situation is truly unique when it comes to community engagement. The community didn't wait around. Instead, they built something remarkable. Players, hardware hobbyists, developers, content creators, and publishers are all a part of the Commodore community, and now we get to build what's next together, unquote. So he was at Unity Game Engine. He was director of community and advocacy for 2 years before they laid him off in January. So he was laid off just a couple of months ago from Unity. So I will say it's kind of interesting because now I'm also in, you know, some of these on, you know, where the evil Zuckerberg site in some, you know, groups to about the Commodore 64 Ultimate. And they're all like, who is this person? I have no clue. Who is this person? One person was like, he needs to learn that it's the European demo scene is the heart of Commodore. And if he didn't say anything about the European demo scene and Commodore wasn't exist today, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, who is he? Who does he think he is coming in? And here's the thing. And I know none of them listen to this podcast because I talk about things that are too new. But Commodore understands, the new Commodore, it seems like they understand that their market is a limited one right now. It is the people who grew up on Commodore 30 years ago or 40 years ago, because the original one came out in like 1982. Those people have probably already bought the Commodore 64 Ultimate. They're not going to buy another one because you don't need another one. You don't need multiple of them. And that market is also shrinking because, frankly, a lot of those people are dying off, right? So, you know, we're getting old. That's what happens. So Commodore, in order to stay a brand that sticks around, needs to find a new audience for Commodore. They can't just rely on the people that were in the European demo scene 40 years ago or 30 years ago or even 20 years ago. And they can't rely on just the nostalgia people like me, because there's a whole bunch of you in chat who didn't grow up on Commodore 64. So you don't care about the Ultimate. You shouldn't. Like, I'm being very serious. Like, if all you wanted to do was play a couple Commodore 64 games, I would not recommend the Ultimate for you. I would recommend getting a Mistier and putting the FPGA core on it, or getting a V64, the C64 Mini or whatever, and that'll emulate the games just fine. I wouldn't suggest the full Commodore 64 Ultimate right now. But they know that they do need to reach out to the people that don't necessarily care about the Commodore 64. They don't have the nostalgia connection to the Commodore 64. And so Major Nelson had a Herculean task in the 2000s, was to get people who grew up on Nintendo and Sony PlayStation to care about Xbox. And the way he did it was he courted the content creators, which was a new thing at the time. It was podcasting was brand new at the time when he was there, and they created the GamerScore blog, and they courted bloggers and podcasters, the new media. And Major Nelson was a huge part of that. He was a huge driver of that. It even got me access when I was a baby podcaster. I talk about this, you know, you want to talk about payola and games or whatever. I was flown up to Microsoft one time for Halo 3, actually. They flew me up in 2007. They secretly flew me up, and I say secretly because they were like, don't tell the person who runs your network. We're inviting you. We're not inviting the network, which pissed off the network. But they flew me up to Bellevue, Washington. I went and met up with the GamerScore blog. I hung out with, it was 16 of us, so 15 other bloggers and podcasters. And they let us play Halo 3 multiplayer early. It was a LAN mode. We were in a conference room. And then we went to the Best Buy in Bellevue where Bill Gates was to give out the first to sell the first copy of Halo on the West Coast. And they gave me a hoodie and all that stuff. So yeah, that was Major Nelson. He did that. And Xbox 360 did gangbusters. It's pretty much the only Xbox that did gangbusters, and it's because of the community outreach. I am convinced it's because of the community outreach, because Sony didn't have the community outreach on the PS3, and so we were seeing all these what we considered blunders from Sony, which they fixed later on. Like, they don't make those blunders now, but Xbox was just, they were right there with the community, and that's why you have a lot of Xbox-named podcasts at the time. We had, you know, Gamertag Radio still exists, but it's because of the outreach that Xbox did. We had XBL Radio. You have True Achievements and, you know, Achievement 360 and all these things that were around the Xbox ecosystem because of that. So if Major Nelson can do something like that with Commodore and bring new people into the Commodore ecosystem to do something with this machine that is not continually connected to the internet, that is not continually connected to AI or generative AI or LLMs, you can get ChatGPT on it. But, you know, that's more, you know, kind of down to basics. And if they can get new people into that, I think Major Nelson is the one person that could probably figure out how to do that. Or there's several people, but he's one person I can think of that could do that. So this is a genius hire for them to expand their base. I don't think Major Nelson is going to be able to make inroads with people who are already fully built in to the Commodore ecosystem and fully love Commodore, but it's the new people, and that's what they need. And they need somebody from the new era of gaming and not just people that were around in the 80s with Commodore. So S. Jaron and Matt in our chat room says, it's true, we did not get a Commodore 64 growing up, so I didn't have the attachment, but I do have a connection to retro gaming and would be interested in whatever else they do. And Mike Def says, see chat, Bobby does like Halo. I did not give it a good review, but it's because I didn't really like it. But I still have the special edition Halo Xbox 360 sitting right here. I'm like pointing to my right. It's in my office. I still have it because that's what they gave us. And so, you know, and there's somewhere there is a picture of all of us holding our Xbox 360s because we didn't know we were getting them. Bringing it home. But I don't have that picture. And so it's out here. So, yeah. All right. So kudos to Major Nelson. Kudos to Commodore. It's a great get. Maybe. Since I'm a content creator and I've talked to Major Nelson twice, the second time I talked to him, he told me he didn't remember me from the first time. He doesn't know who I am, but we have interacted in the past, back in the Xbox 360 days. And maybe I'll get something. I mean, the current Commodore, it's being run by a YouTuber, a retro YouTuber. He bought all the assets and brought us Commodore. Anyway. Let's not talk about Commodore. Let's talk about pinball. Let's talk about anything but video games. But this is a video game. And I did want to mention this because this was brought up in our Discord server. It's a renaming of things, but also I wanted to kind of give a little bit of a heads up if you wanted to get something. So Zen Pinball, as Zen Studios made Zen Pinball or Pinball FX, they have several different pinball products across several different things, different platforms, different modes of play, and it's a little confusing. So they are streamlining some things. So they're changing the names of some things, and this is technically a live service type of thing because you can get the actual like Pinball FX for free, but then you buy the tables, and you used to be able to just buy like, I want a full pass for like a month, and they got rid of that. That doesn't happen anymore. And remember, and Zen Pinball was bought by Epic Games a couple years ago, but it still works on, they still have Steam and everything, all that stuff, but they had on their main games right now on PC were Pinball FX and Pinball M. The reason it was called Pinball M is because they needed, because the ESRB only rates the main product. They don't have different ratings for different DLC. So if any of your DLC is rated M, your entire product is rated M. And they didn't want to do that when they also had like My Little Pony tables and things like that. So they created a second game called Pinball M to house things like the Dead by Daylight pinball table, the Duke Nukem 3D pinball table, based on Chucky and The Thing and other horror properties. But they've decided they're going to change a lot of the names. So they are also, they've been supporting multiple console generations. And so what they're doing, they're consolidating and renaming some things. So future Pinball FX and Pinball M releases will no longer launch on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Starting June 1st, the Pinball FX season support will also end on those platforms. So it also extends to Zen Pinball World, and I believe that's the mobile version. Anyway, all previously purchased tables, online services such as leaderboards, tournaments, events, and offline play will be unimpacted and remain available. So they're not closing the servers on PlayStation 4, but they're not going to make any new things for PlayStation 4. PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series consoles will remain supported with new content in the future. Now, here's the thing I wanted to mention because I love this pinball machine. Jamie, Dark Sakura, loves this pinball machine. And I do not have the room or the money to own the physical version. I am not cool like Jamie like that. So one of the places I play it is Pinball FX. But due to licensing reasons, World Cup Soccer will be removed from the stores on April 30th. It's important to note that players who purchase the table before its removal will be able to play it in the future without any interruptions. The table is currently available in Pinball FX, Pinball FX VR, Zen Pinball World, and At Games Legend, which At Games has it's a virtual pinball cabinet. We will aim to provide discounts for the table on as many platforms as possible and let you know about them on our social channels. This also affects the Williams Pinball Premium Bundle, which will be reworked in the future without World Cup Soccer. World Cup Soccer, it's based on the 94 World Cup, which was here in the U.S. And it's actually a really fun table, and I have it. On my virtual pinball cabinet, I have it in Pinball FX. It is amazing. It is great. So if it is something that you might like to play, you may want to go ahead and download that DLC on your Steam account or PlayStation or whatever. So you're going to want to get it by April 30th. And it's kind of interesting because we got the World Cup coming here and the World Cup table's going away. And I bet I would not be surprised if FIFA is relicensing it to someone else for the World Cup. They tend to do that, and they think they can get more money from that table, from the license of that table, with someone else than they can with Zen Pinball. They're also going to be renaming just about everything that they have. So like, if you have some of these old things, the names are going to change, and it's going to kind of like move around in your Steam library. So Pinball FX is going to be the same. And they had like Pinball FX 1, 2, 3, and then just Pinball FX, right? Pinball FX is the current version running on Unreal Engine, and it was launched on Epic Games first and then moved over. So Pinball M is now going to be called Pinball FX Midnight. So that's the horror games, M-rated tables, things like that. Zen Pinball World will be renamed to Pinball FX Go. So now I can actually say, okay, yes, that is the mobile version because it's Go, right? Pinball FX 2 VR will be renamed Pinball FX Classic VR. So that Pinball FX 2 VR is available on PC VR platforms, and it's they're basically renaming Pinball FX some of that stuff Classic. The rebranding process also affects Pinball FX 3, but certain platforms will be handled differently. So the game and the DLCs will be hidden on the PlayStation Store and Nintendo Switch eShop, meaning they won't be discoverable for players from the beginning of May. However, if you already have the game in your inventory on those platforms, which remember, Pinball FX 3, I believe, is free. The base game is free. These changes won't affect you, as the game will remain in your library and you'll still be able to expand your table collection through the in-game shop. Unfortunately, they cannot do this on Xbox and the Microsoft Store due to technical reasons, meaning that the game and its DLCs will be removed from the store at the beginning of May, and acquiring these titles will not be possible in the future. The exact date will be shared later. They're also going to have some discounts before their removal. On Steam, Pinball FX 3 will be renamed to Pinball FX Classic. Its DLCs will be remain available to serve purchase. Our wonderful cabinet building community and other infrastructure, such as the legacy bundles, rely heavily on this game, making it an important cornerstone of our current pinball environment. So basically, the people like me that have pinball cabinets, a lot of them are running FX 3. They're not running the new FX. I'm actually running both. But that's why they're keeping that. I bet the Legends cabinets or some of the older cabinets that they've already sold that were thousands of dollars require FX3, so they're going to keep it around, and it's the Steam version that they were all using. None of these changes are going to impact the game's functionality in any way. Online services will continue to operate in the future. So, the Cliff's Notes, the TLDL, too long, didn't listen. Name changes are coming. The old versions of the game are being taken away from stores. Some completely delisted, some just hidden. Older consoles are no longer going to get new content. And World Cup Soccer, that individual table, is leaving the service next month. So there you go. So really, if you have the current new Pinball FX, don't worry. You have new Pinball FX on Steam, don't worry. But you may want to pick up just the World Cup table and buy that. And it's a couple bucks. I don't remember exactly how much it is. And just get that in your library, and then you'll be fine. Yeah. So let's talk about the sad news. This is why I sit here. I'm like, why am I still doing a podcast? I still have to talk about this. But more layoffs. The purge of talented individuals from the industry continues. IGN reports that EA has laid off an unknown number of individuals across its Battlefield teams, including workers at Criterion, DICE, Ripple Effect, and Motive Studios. Individuals are being informed that layoffs are taking place as part of a realignment across the Battlefield studios as the team continues its ongoing live service support for Battlefield 6 following launch. All four service studios will remain operational. The layoff seems to be infecting a variety of teams across multiple studios and offices. And by the way, Game Developer Conference was this week. IGN asked EA for comment on the total number and types of roles impacted, as well as for the specific reason. An EA spokesman said, quote, "We've made select changes within our Battlefield organization to better align our teams around what matters most to our community. Battlefield remains one of our biggest priorities, and we're continuing to invest in the franchise, guided by player feedback and insights from Battlefield Labs," unquote. Battlefield 6 was the best-selling game of 2025 in the United States. It sold a record-shattering 7 million copies in 3 days and was the best launch ever for a game in the franchise. However, months since Battlefield 6 launch has seen the game begin to struggle from patch to patch. Fans have criticized a number of updates due to reasons ranging from cosmetics to movement, and Steam reviews have fallen to mixed from mostly positive. There's heavy monetization. Use of generative AI for in-game cosmetics. These are some of the criticisms. Fewer content updates than expected. The criticisms were heavy enough that the teams delayed the start of Season 2 to allow more time to implement community feedback. Concurrent players have also dropped. The launch, they had 747,000 players concurrently playing at its peak. Now, typically in the tens of thousands. Battlefield 6 had 67,000 or 67,000 peak concurrent players. Yeah, I did that. On Valve's platform just yesterday. And, yeah, so there was also something, and this was a story about 8 months ago, that the target that Battlefield needed to hit was 110 million players. This was a story from like 8 months ago, so I don't know if how it really shook out, but there weren't even 110 million Xbox and PlayStation consoles on the market when they made that claim. So they had these unrealistic expectations. There's a story not in my show roll with was it Mark Kaplan from Blizzard talking about Overwatch and how basically like he was told in 2021 that Overwatch 2 needed to make X amount of money, which was like more money than they could ever feasibly make. And if they didn't, they were going to lay off 1,000 people and blame him for it. And so he left. That story is in our Discord and you can find it. It was a very long interview. A four-hour interview we did with another podcast and like other outlets put on it. But it's things like that. Like 110 million players is outlandish. That will never happen. But the suits in charge are just, that's the number. And I have worked for executives that throw out things. And even if you tell them, look, that's not possible, he's like, well, make it possible. Well, with that attitude, of course, it's not going to be possible. And then obviously it's not possible. The person I'm thinking of mostly did it with dates, or it's like, you have 2 weeks to do this. I'm like, it takes 6 weeks to do this. He's like, no, you're going to do it in two. And I'm like, I can't do it in two. You know, maybe you can find somebody else that can do it in two, but I can't do it in two. And then it took him 8 weeks instead, because they found someone else and it took him 8 weeks to do it. And I said it'd be done in six. Anyway. So they give these impossibly high numbers. So Battlefield 6 shattered records, but it didn't shatter the records by enough amount for them to keep people going. QuestBusters does say, a side note, the EA buyout deal, remember the Saudi Arabia, the private investment funds buying EA, saddles them with $20 billion of debt. And you can lower the debt by doing two things, either selling more products or spending less money making the product, which is basically wages. And that's how you pay off the debt. And that's what's going on here. And I think it's because now EA says it has nothing to do with the acquisition. Uh-huh. Right. But so what's the point of working on a title that needs to break sales records? Then when it does break sale record, they fire you anyway. And this is, I've talked about this before, that this is a problem emblematic of the fact that we are in doing live service. Because what was your plan? How are you going to keep the entire team that built together when you go into maintenance and customizing mode? In the past, it was not a problem because that team would just work on the next game. But now there is no next game. It's a live service. We are continuing to work on this game. It's out now. It's been built. Now we just let the money continually roll in. We don't need to make anything new. So what was your plan to keep those developers? Or was the plan always to lay them off? And now you're going to be like, oh, well, it didn't sell enough. There aren't 110 million players, so we can't afford to keep you all. In the past, we just work on the next game. They'd be working on Battlefield 7, but Battlefield 7, not happening right now. Because it's a live service game. Why work on Battlefield 7 when Battlefield 6 is right here and we're already getting money in from players? As Sharon Matt says, hey, let's bring in all staff on a Saturday and Sunday and have hackathon. Give everyone pizza to solve our problems. And as Sharon Matt also says, EA ravaged studios and teams by taking them off projects to work on Battlefield. Now they're just letting them go, Criterion Games being one of them. Yeah, I mean, you know, they basically said, okay, now you all need to work on this. You know, Activision did the same with Call of Duty. You know, they're like, oh, yeah, you people, you're really great at doing Skylanders and Spyro the Dragon. No. Now you're a Call of Duty developer. Now you're going to work on all Call of Duty stuff. And then we're going to close you down because, you know, we're done with Call of Duty. It's a live service game. We don't need you anymore. So that's the this is the downside of the live service games, because now companies are like, no, we just make one game and we work on that game forever. And you need way more people to build a house than you do to add a room to a house or to renovate a room in the house or stuff like that. That's just how it works. And, you know, I don't know if the future, if the answer to this is they don't hire all the staff to build it. They contract out to other companies who then go out and do the next contract. And that way they're not laying off people. It's just, yeah, we're contracting this company to work on this for 6 months to a year. And then when the contract's over, they are now free to accept the next contract from the next publisher of making their next live service game. That's how they should do it. But instead, they were hiring people internally that then they no longer needed because the house has been built. You don't need a whole bunch of electricians when the house is already wired. You maybe need one or two electricians to make modifications or to repair things or something like that. Nestor and Matt says, hiring of salary employees, but treat them like contract temp employees by firing them after each project. And because of live service, that's where we're at now. And it's kind of sad. On that note, we're going to take a quick music break so we can all collectively sigh. Then we'll be back and hopefully talking about more fun things. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show and the Voice Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork.
This is Professor Shy Guy participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show.
Professor Shy Guy, friend of the show. He's been on the show a couple times. With the music, I think he's still doing music. He kind of branched out from the 8-bit chiptune thing for a bit. Hope he's doing well. I'm going to just pause for a second here just in case somebody goes into the green room. We do have the green room. If somebody wants to call in, I give about a minute. I didn't say anything in chat to have people come in. But that's how we can take calls. We used to take calls over Skype, RIP Skype. Actually, no. No F's in the chat for Skype. Skype sucked in the end. We can take calls because this is done like an AM radio talk show. And there's some holdovers from that, even though like people don't call into radio shows anymore. Actually, sports radio. Like, unless you're doing sports, which I don't, much to pod culture's happiness, that I don't do sports. And stuff. So yeah, KT Dark Soccer says you're listening to KTMI. Too much info all the time. Yes, that is. Sometimes I do give too much info about things, but yeah, Esther and Matt did have a follow up comment right as I was going to break about the Battlefield 6 story and about the volatility of the game industry, especially. Saying that it's scummy because these people move or change their lives around to work for a studio that can be shut down in a moment's notice. I know folks who have gone through this, and I've seen it all. A lot is that people they move their entire family across country to the Bay Area for their dream job, and then 6 months later, they're laid off, and now they're in a more expensive place with expensive rent, more expensive everything. Than what they're used to. And, it is what it is. That's what it's like in the Bay Area. And so, like, if you came from, like, North Carolina and moved to the Bay Area, yeah, that's a huge jump. And it sucks because now they're, like, they've already spent all the money to move. They got relocated, and maybe they got some relocation assistance, but they're not going to get any relocation assistance to get back to North Carolina or wherever in the Midwest or whatever. And they're kind of stuck. And it was supposed to be the dream job, and then it's gone. And that's why I like remote work, because then you don't have to move. And so, I've changed jobs 3 times in the past 2 years. The first job I had been at for over 10 years. So I don't like changing companies. But that job that was over 10 years, I was remote at all 3 of them. And I was even remote at the job before then as well. So, like, all my jobs since 2007 have been remote jobs. But the first one, the office was up in Chattanooga, Tennessee, which isn't that far. It's maybe a 2-hour drive from where I am. And it's not that bad. And I actually really enjoyed going up and stopping by the office and visiting everybody, because it's a beautiful city, Chattanooga, right on the Tennessee River. Going up and going to see them, and it was great. The second job that I had last year, actually their office was here. It was in Atlanta. It was actually right by where the Atlanta Braves play, and which meant I got free parking at any Braves game in one of the decks that the Braves team uses, and I would go up and it'd be like, no, I work here. They're like, oh, welcome back, sir. You know, and when the Braves people were checking people for the parking vouchers. But I didn't have to go in the office often, which was fine, but I worked from home. And then now the job I'm at, their headquarters are in San Diego. And I don't have to move to San Diego to go work for them. So that's what it's kind of nice. Dark Sawgrass, did you ride the Chattanooga Choo Choo? I didn't. So as far as I know, it doesn't actually move anymore. So there is the Chattanooga Choo Choo. Chattanooga is known as a big rail town. The Chattanooga Choo Choo is a hotel and I believe a restaurant where you can actually dine in the old cars. They turned those old train cars into either hotel rooms, or I believe there is a restaurant that you dine in the actual cars. They built a building around, and that's the Chattanooga Choo Choo. And no, I did not do that any of the times I was up there. I did see Rock City, though, which if you've driven through the South, you've seen. See Rock City! Anyway, coming up next here on the Voice Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VoggaNetwork is Orange Lounge Radio 2DX, three people who talk about all things geek culture for much longer than I do. We like to check in with them just to see what they're talking about and what's on their minds. So I believe it's in here. OLR, are you there?
I am. Hi.
Hi. So... yeah, no, I did not get to ride the Chattanooga Choo Choo because I don't think you can ride the Chattanooga Choo Choo anymore.
I was thinking of the song. My grandmother used to sing it to me when I was a kid.
Yeah, I mean, the Chattanooga Choo Choo is a real thing, and they have the real train there. And you can actually, like, spend the night in the train, in the build. Like, they built a building around it and stuff. Onto that.
No, I knew it was a real thing. It's just the thought of it always just makes me think of my grandmother. So I had a little moment of bittersweetness.
Yeah, I understand. No, it's a beautiful city, though. I would move to Chattanooga. I just don't want to move.
I haven't been since I was little. And honestly, no force in the universe would ever have me move back to the South.
Right. Yeah, I understand.
Would visit, though.
Yeah. I mean, this is where I store all my stuff. So that's why I'm staking around. So I talked because we both love pinball, and so because of the news of World Cup Soccer being delisted from Pinball FX, do you still have your physical version?
Oh, heck yeah, that is my child.
Yes, yeah. So that's bolted to your floor.
Divers.
Yeah, that's bolted to your floor. So for people maybe who I'm like sitting here like, you should probably pick up the World Cup. You know, if all you can play is virtual pinball, if all you can play is digital pinball, because you're not like, you know, you don't have circumstances, everybody's circumstance is different. And I'm like, you should go pick this up for a couple bucks. Sell people on this machine. Why should, what is it about World Cup Soccer that you love? And why should people pick it up before it gets delisted on April 30th?
A good portion of my love for it is nostalgia, because it was one of the first tables I played regularly. We had it in the game room at the University of South Alabama. Mm-hmm. But besides that, I will start off by saying that it's very beginner friendly. Mm-hmm. The rules in it are very obvious. And then as you progress in your expertise in playing, your skill level, you'll start finding more and more difficult targets to hit, mm-hmm. like getting like the skill, the stamina, or I'll tell you this one. I have only twice in my life hit final draw on purpose. Mm-hmm. Every other time it's been an absolute accident. Mm-hmm. You have some fun different modes like the big go round, and that one is harder than it sounds, hitting three goals in a row. The TV award, you've got the multi-ball in that is pretty fun, and like I said, it's easy to catch your ball, not so easy to hit final draw. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot of fun, and I love the music in it. The music is really good, especially the music that plays when they have you when like to start catching your ball for mm-hmm. multi-ball, that preliminary music.
Yeah.
I have a video of that saved somewhere where I can just listen to the music right off the ROM.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I'm probably about that the way Dan is about Sword of Rage.
Yeah. So, and the other thing about World Cup Pinball is
the score,
they give a lot of points.
They do. Yes. It's nice.
Yeah. So it's like you're getting these huge numbers. And so you're like, oh yeah. So it makes you feel better.
It's gratifying for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Then when you're playing a table, you're like, oh, I only got, 5,000 points on that ball. No, you get 5,000 points for breathing on World Cup Pinball.
Mm-hmm. And it has one of the easiest, I'm not going to say super easiest skill mm-hmm. shots, but one of the most fun skill shots because you have to, it's a coin toss. And so when you hit the ball, it actually goes up a little circular kind of ramp and then has to end in one of three inserts. And so if you nail it, you get the coin toss and you even see it on screen. Everything is perfectly soccer/football. Mm-hmm. Themed, and even has a little mascot, which, by the way, hold on. I have a bigger one too, but this is my little guy.
Yeah. And I believe that actually was the mascot of the 1994 World Cup here in the U.S.
He was. Yeah. He absolutely was. In fact, there's his little USA.
There it is.
Yeah. But I have the bigger one somewhere. Yeah. And he lives on my desk.
Yeah. And the nice thing, one of the good things that Pinball FX does is they also have the full table guide that tells you about all the modes, and they will even show you, like, as you scroll through, they'll zoom in on the part. So they're like, if you go to this ramp, it'll do this. And it does kind of walk you through all the modes, which is not something that you typically get when you're trying to play it in arcade. You'll maybe have like the little card on the left or the right or right by the flippers that's in really small text. And it's like, oh, blah, 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 blah. But the Pinball FX for all their tables actually goes through and even like zooms in with the camera on things to kind of explain things. It doesn't show it to you, but it does like tell you and just show you where on the table you're looking at. So it's also a good way to learn more of the intricacies. And I think having something like World Cup Pinball that is not as complex rule-wise as a lot of modern tables are is a great jumping off point. Then you can graduate up to the ones that have more complex rule sets.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the other big thing for me with that one, too, is that even if you've paid attention to all of those guys and all of those rules, I really like having the service number one as an educational tool, but there are often things that you won't notice until you're actually in the game. You're like, oh yeah, that's what it was talking about. You know, there's always a surprise, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't say that it's as, say, surprise laden as something like Theater of Magic, mm-hmm. but this is also a John Papaduk table.
Yeah.
And like all of my favorites have been I love Arabian Nights.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So, if you find one in the wild, take us a picture.
Yeah.
And if it's in bad shape, find whoever maintains it and kick them in the kneecap.
There you go.
In your mind, not for real.
Yes.
Yeah. But mine's recently had like a playfield and cabinet art touch up. Mm-hmm. Mine's pretty.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my local arcades has it.
Yeah. She sits right next to Black Knight 2000. And on that one's other side is Theater Magic.
Yeah. Pinball Holy royalty Trinity. Right there.
Well, we're trying. We still have our Doctor Who. Okay. We still have AC/DC, Ghostbusters, Transformers, which I don't really like it because I also don't like the movies.
Yeah.
Galactic Tank Force is still trippy as heck to play. If you find a Galactic Tank Force, play it. Mm-hmm. But you should always, if you see a World Cup, go show it some love.
Yeah.
She's a good table.
Yep. Score some goals.
Yeah. And remember, goal!
So on that note, what else is going to be talking about on Orange Lounge Radio 2DX tonight?
We have some follow-ups from last week about Castlevania and Marvel Maximum. We have some Buffy news. Mm-hmm. kind of sad. I won't say more. We have some stuff. Actually, there's a little bit of sad news because one of my favorite voice actors also died. But we have some good things updated, you know, new Lego news and some new anime stuff.
Lego wants more of my money. I'm just convinced.
They do. Like, I even want this.
Yep. Orange Lounge Radio 2DX is coming up next. Thanks so much, Jamie.
Anytime.
So that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here at the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us, interact with the show directly, or you can join us on the podcast feed or on our Discord server, vognetwork.com/Discord. And also, I am on Instagram at Bobby Black Wolf, Blue Sky at BobbyBlackWolf.com. You can find me on those places. Hey, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet, but we would not be able to make all this work without the help of the live chatters who go above and beyond. So thank you so much, Sean322, for resubscribing for the 40th month. Thank you so much for that. Pod Culture resubscribed. Thank you. S. Jerna Matt cheered 200 bits saying hoip, which I believe did start a hype train. Then Sean322 also cheered 200 bits and said hoip. Dark Sakura gifted a sub to Immortal King. Thank you so much. And we did get a raid earlier from Kuro Kihari-chan. I'm reading it very small font, so I apologize for that. Thank you so much for the raid earlier, because Orange Lounge Radio 2DX is coming up next. So I will hit the button so we can go ahead and get to that. And thank you also to everybody that's got, I saw the watch streaks come in. They're like, people are hitting like their 20 consecutive streams with the watch streaks. Thank you so much. You being here is really all we ask for. The bits and subs do help, and it's amazing. But you being here and still supporting independent podcasts that maybe don't have the largest audience to have a 5-hour interview about Overwatch. Thank you so much. Now I will let you go. I'm going to hit the button. I'm getting sappy and sentimental. So, thank you so much. Enjoy things. Try to enjoy life. Try to enjoy your games. I'll see you next week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Black Wolf Studios.